Welcome to the Sales Acceleration Show, where we talk about the science of selling across the areas of demand generation, sales, and sales operation. This show is about doing. We focus on real problems, real solutions with real people, all dedicated to accelerating sales.
I'm Gabe Larson.
And I'm Steve Ehrer. Let's dive in.
Welcome to the Inside Sales Sales Acceleration Podcast. We've got an interesting show today, Steve. We're going to be hearing from our friend and colleague, SVP of Sales, Dan Freund.
Absolutely. I'm excited for this one. This is a good presentation. I was there when he gave it.
Yeah, so Dan Freund recently joined InsideSales.com, coming from Oracle, 20-plus years at Oracle, ran, I believe, the Inside Sales division there. Is that correct, Steve?
Yeah, he actually grew that quite a bit. It's interesting to see that kind of that mentality that he's bringing over to us and learn from a kind of a different perspective. It's always good to see something new.
Yeah, out of the box ideas is kind of Dan Freund's mantra. He gave a presentation at our user conference, Accelerate, just mm-hmm. last month.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be there and watch this presentation live, and it was I was taking notes quickly. I was glad that we got the video and the audio later so I could listen to it again.
Yeah, I love how he just said, I mean, he had some classic lines in there. You know, there are no rules. You make the rules. If you feel it's right for your business, you trust it and go with it. And he talks through how he was able to really transform his team and then ultimately that division at Oracle by really words like prioritization, target accounts, really structuring your business around those territories and opportunities that are going to make you the most money.
Absolutely. And in fact, I would suggest that if you listen to this this podcast, listen to it once and enjoy it. Then go back and listen to it a second time with a notebook and take some notes. He's got some great bits of advice in there.
Love it. All right, well, let's turn it over to Dan Freund, SVP of InsideSales.com Commercial Sales.
My pleasure to bring up Mr. Dan Freund. Dan.
Hey, everybody. Okay, so first off, I don't have slides, as Mick told you. I'm not a professional speaker, and I had some big acts to follow this morning, so I'm going to try to keep you with me. I came up with a talk track to talk about different sales models and what you can roll out to optimize your sales teams, but I started thinking of how I got there, and I want to take you way back, and I'm going to take you on a little bit of a career journey, and the sad thing is you know how it ends with me speaking to you, so it's only going to go so far, but I think it gives you some context, and you might get some takeaways that you can apply to your job, to your career, to your team. You know, way back in the beginning, I went to college. I went to Mass Maritime Academy. I majored in marine engineering. I graduated. I went to work for General Dynamics Electric Boat Division. I built submarines for 2 years. I had a good friend from college in sales, and I learned that he was making twice as much money as I was. Time for a career change. And I don't know if you've made a career change, but this was my first change. And I sold employee leasing services, my first sales job. And it was about 7 years. They started to regulate the industry. We had difficulty selling. I had to get out, and I had to make a change. And I was in the Boston area, and there was just high-tech everywhere, sales jobs. I had no high-tech background. I wasn't a computer guy. I wasn't techie. Although I was an engineer, that wasn't my thing. But I realized I've got to find my way into that industry because that's where all the growth was. When I started talking to people and networking, I learned that people selling tech made twice as much money as people selling employee leasing services. And then I said, now I know I have to get there. So my first job in the tech space was with a company called Silicon Graphics. Some of you may remember them. They were super hot, super cool, and actually one of my mentors is here, Bob Anthony, sitting in the audience, and he remembers when I came in, and I was hired with other people that came from Sun, that came from DEC, IBM, and I was the experiment with no tech background, no customer base to call on, and long story short, I had to make it just by working, true grit, buddying up to my SEs, finding my way there, and I achieved success in my first year. I eked it out, and I made my number. So I was like, whew, made it into the new industry. This is great. Year two, things weren't going as well. Software was hot, and I learned that software guys made more money than hardware guys. So I'm like, okay, I got to get software. And I was working with this recruiter, and this recruiter said, Dan, you've got to get to Oracle. Let me place you at Oracle. I know everybody over there. I said, no. I'm not a big company guy. I've heard about those guys. They burn and churn and aggressive. I want a smaller company, developing company. Everyone knows my name. Not for me. So I got sold on this anyways. He's like, go there for 2 years. Just put in 2 years, and I can place you anywhere in New England. So I'm like, all right, I'll give it a shot. I go to Oracle. First day I show up, I get handed a list of accounts. Here's your account list. You've got Tech Products, Connecticut, Mid-Market, and I'm living in New Hampshire. I'm like, okay. Anything else? Yeah, if you have any questions, ask the other reps. I got a list of 250 accounts that were between $100 million in revenue and $500 million in revenue in Connecticut, and the first account on the list was Acme Manufacturing. Who do you think I called first? Acme Manufacturing, right? I don't know if you guys ever went through this transformation, but it took me a year to figure out where to spend time in my territory because I was trying to cover the whole territory. I made my number. Like, hooray. Did it again. The day after I made my number, people invited me to lunch. That was the other thing. Tough company. New England. Anyone from New England?
Yeah.
Like, we're not very friendly. You had to make your number so that people knew you were going to be there next year just to get invited to lunch. That was the climate. No direction, no tools, and you had to figure it out. Sink or swim. So I make my number. I get into the second year. This is after the dot-com bubble just started to crash. Wave crashed on the beach. Our high-paying reps that were the hot shots had left and gone to dot-com companies. We had other reps that were a mixed bag. We had some reps that came in from Oracle Direct that were developing. And I went and I pitched my VP with this great idea. And this was not like me. I proposed that he promote me to manager. I don't know where I got this, but I believe that I could drive more revenue for the company if I was leading a team, particularly of newer people. And I pitched the idea, not even believing these words are coming out of my mouth, and he's smiling at me. Long story shorter, I got the promotion 3 months later. I had presented him with a business case that if he put me in a territory, I knew I could make my number, which is about $3.5 million. If he put me in a region with newer reps, even if four of the six made their number, I'd drive more incremental growth to his business. Is that a business case? Closed the deal, got the job. My boss left a few months later. They gave me all of New England. I had the leftovers from the wave that had crashed on the beach and a mismatch of reps, some jaded, some talented, some new. I was the manager, and I still didn't really know what I was doing. So what did I do? I studied 5 years of bookings. Because I didn't know those other territories in the Boston area, North Shore. I didn't know the space. I knew Connecticut. It took me a year to learn it. I didn't have a year to learn another seven territories. So I studied, and I studied, and I studied, and I learned that 85% of our business in the tech space was with business services companies. 15% was with manufacturers. Yet we had a bunch of people like me that had 250 accounts, 300 accounts, and they were trying to cover them all. So I said, okay, we're going to take all manufacturing and we're going to move it over here. And we're going to have named lists, and they don't have to be that long. And I got my four most senior reps, and I said, I got a project for you. You got 6 weeks. 6 weeks, I need you to come up with 320 of the best accounts to have on a named account list. And I need you to work as a team. And you can read VentureWire, you can talk to partners, you can look in install reports. The only rules are, has to be business services. So of course they're coming back to me and they're saying, Dan, how does this work? Like, what are the rules gonna be? If I find it, can I keep it? I said, nope, goes on the list. Okay. What if I sold to them before? Goes on the list. We worked through it over several weeks, get the list, refine it, check it, make sure it's all business services, divide randomly by four, and those are my four territories for name lists. Everything else went into the geography. What I was trying to do is I was trying to create this environment that was fair, where we could hire new salespeople, and they had a shot at making the number. Because before, it's the people that were in first that had the relationship with the boss and the big accounts, and were historically performers, they got the fat territories. The new guys got Connecticut, or God forbid, Western Massachusetts. that was classic new guy territory. And it was a revolving door. And I was looking and I was saying, this isn't going to work. We're not going to grow this region unless we distribute our resources in a way that's fair and equitable so that new people have a shot at making it. And senior guys that are used to making a ton of money have to exercise new muscles. So to speed up the story, it worked. But it took some selling. I had to sell my boss on letting me organize that way because that was unconventional. He wanted me to tweak the territories we had. So I had to present the case. Even more so, I had to sell my reps. I had some senior reps. I had some newer reps. I had a mixed mash of people. They didn't get along. They didn't hang out with each other. I inherited them. We were the Bad News Bears. But I used the data to sell them on why they'd be successful. I learned they only needed 80 accounts. They're used to 250, 300 accounts. You only need 80 because I took all the manufacturing out. That's a distraction. I showed you which ones are your install base, and I learned that on average, you had to do 23 deals to make your number. Four or five field deals, the rest could be through inside sales, transactional. This is how we're going to get there. The end of our first full year as a region, number one in North America. I couldn't believe it. I went from new guy to a first-line manager that got invited to sit on panels and share ideas. I broke out of a meeting once. I called my wife in the hallway. I said, honey, you're not going to believe this. I have people taking notes when I say things in meetings. 2 years ago, no one would go to lunch with me. And there's a couple lessons learned there. Number one, I didn't have a plan, and I built a plan with what just seemed to make sense. Nobody handed it down. I thought I was in this big established company where you couldn't innovate anymore. You couldn't build anything. And I was just trying to survive. And I built something that worked. And the next thing you know, people are taking notes. That's like your first indicator. There's people starving for leadership and ideas and innovation. And too often, people fall into this track where they just follow the path, right? Especially in a big company. There's a way. This is how we do it. This is how we do licensing. This is how we call on our customers. These are our rules of engagement. And with our team, we broke out of that. Okay? The other thing, without knowing those territories, without knowing the reps very well, I had to give them a lot of rope and a lot of trust. But we had certain rules. And the rules were you had to be at our forecast meeting every week. We had it a Thursday afternoon. And after the meeting, you had to go out for drinks even if you didn't drink. You had to go out. Because you know what happens when you go out? You talk about deals. You talk about customers. You talk about strategy. And best practices are shared. And the next thing you know, I have a guy named David Rome. He cracks open the first embedded license deal in New England with Conquer Communications for $1 million. And everybody on my team's like, whoa, $1 million deal. That's a big deal back then. Embedded software licenses, you had to sell to product managers. It was a different license agreement, different contract. It was royalty-based. Totally different, but it was in our bag. Nobody knew about it. The very next quarter, four of my reps did embedded license deals. By the end of that year, we were doing 20% of our revenue as embedded licensing. In fact, at the mid-year point, we drove 75% of the revenue in North America, in New England, embedded license. So all of a sudden, we had this new engine running. And it was shared through these best practices of our reps. And then we started doing it with middleware. Hired somebody who's actually married to one of our board members, Kristen Barrett, first middleware rep in New England. I probably shouldn't say this. Maybe it's not private, but she made seven figures her second year in the role. We were the top-performing middleware rep, middleware region in North America. That second year, also number one in North America. So what's going on here? What's the dynamic? This is what I believe the dynamic was. We had a framework of fairness and accountability, but autonomy in every territory, so people owned it. They built it. They innovated. And they started studying our region. We grew organically. By the end of the second year, we were two regions in New England. We didn't pick up a single additional account. We went from 80 accounts to 60 accounts to 40 accounts, and with more focus came more innovation. It got harder. And those were the rules. That's the framework. I told these guys, They tell me, like, Dan, you're going to drive us off a cliff. Like, we love you, we trust you, but you're crazy. We can't do it with 40 accounts. I said, we won't know unless we try. You know, if we lose our jobs, like, we'll just get another one. Like, what? You know, I was looking for a job when I found this one. You just got to think that way. And what we did is our most senior capable reps didn't get fat. They had to exercise new muscles, and we were breaking new ground, and people started studying us. The head of North America at the time, Keith Block, he used to call me. He's like, hey, Dan, how are you guys selling so much middleware? I said, I don't know. I didn't know. He goes, no, tell me, what do you do? Well, like, what's your go-to-market strategy? How do you segment accounts? What's your messaging? I'm like, I got to ask my reps. Can I call you back? And what I learned through, he had three phone calls back and forth, and he said, talk to me about how do you run your forecast meeting? And I told him, and I said, well, one of the things I do at the end of the forecast meeting, and I do this now here at Inside Sales, at the end of the month, but every week at a forecast meeting, I would have our reps walk up and write on the whiteboard what they were going to do in middleware. Because that was a new focus area for us, but it wasn't additional commissions. They had one number. And I basically created a memo quota, and I created this like peer pressure where they had to walk up and write it on the board every week. And then eventually somebody would write a zero at the end of the quarter because their opportunities fell apart. That's all we did, and we were the number one producing middleware region in North America, enough to be studied. So then we started innovating more. We started doing unlimited license agreements, which is a common thing at Oracle today. But we were an early adopter. We got to the point where everyone on the team had done one in one fiscal year. We were blowing out the number. And they gave me another region down in mid-Atlantic, which was rich in territory. They hadn't done one. They hadn't done one embedded license deal. And that was common practice for us. And I went down there as their new VP. At that point, I was a VP. And I'm like, guys, why aren't you doing this? There's money. This is like real revenue here. And they were like, yeah, we've talked to our customers. They don't like to buy that way. Okay. They're using the same products, same licensing as people in New England. But down here in Virginia and Maryland, they don't like to buy. Like, you believe that? They did. They had these guardrails. Like, this is how we do things here. And what I'm trying to convey to you is there are no rules. They're your rules. And it doesn't matter if you're new in your role, new in your company, owner of a company, you can make your own rules if you do the work up front. I did the work up front. I had the data. I had the data to sell to my team, to sell to my boss. And that was the early stages of my career development, really getting into the power of data science in a pretty crude Excel way. But we built models that we could build a sales model around where we'd get a high success rate. I had years where every rep on the team made club, which is unusual. That helped their careers. It helped the team. We went from bad news bears to a magnet for talent within Oracle. We had people from apps, which was like really cool back then, to move over and be apps just before we bought PeopleSoft. People trying to get on our team. My reps interviewed everybody. Nobody was good enough to join all of a sudden. Like, we were bad news bears. Everyone was going to quit. And now no one was good enough to join us. And we grew. And as we continued to tighten up what was on named list and added more named account reps, everything else went in the geography. I hired a couple of guys. One of them is here as a customer prospect, Matt Carey. Another one's Jim Sieve. He was here yesterday. They got the geographies, also known as the shit, all the entities, manufacturing, limited to no install base, and that's where some companies would be born, some of these like after the wave crash type .coms, thousands. And I'm like, how are these guys going to cover thousands of shitty companies? Like, nobody wants to spend time there. Ah, I have an idea. We've got this inside sales engine down the street. They like to make calls. They like to knock on doors. They like to do small deals. Oh, that's right. We also have this partner community, the channel. And there's always this like channel conflict. Nobody at Oracle would ever want to give somebody a deal if they're in the channel. And the channel, do you think the channel wanted to hang out down there? They didn't want to hang out down there either. So I had an idea. I said, I'll make this all channel. Just, it's all channel. And Matt and Jim had to be 100% channel businesses. So that got the channel interested because they're like, this is free. This is no fly zone. I can sell in here. So what we did is we built it out. We grew and we proved out an all partner territory model that got rolled out across North America. That led, am I almost out of time? 2 minutes? Oh, need more time. Okay. So that model, the success of that model led to an idea that I proposed up to Keith Block, who's running North America at the time. I said, you should have a model where there's a manager that sits in the field with four or five inside sales reps that support them. They have a common go-to-market strategy. They're driving volume. They're aligned with partners. And there's a face to the customer and the partner to do the bigger deals. Because 90% of our deals were small. The 10% that were big could move the needle for the whole company. So I pitched it. He came back and he's like, well, what do you mean? Where should this, like, how are you going to do this? I said, no, it sits in Oracle Direct. It doesn't sit in the field with me. And he's like, but you're going to lose this territory. Like, why would you propose it? I said, because it makes sense. We're not specialized in this market. It's too expensive to cover the traditional way with field over inside. It's lean. It'll save money in your cost of sales. We'll get better coverage and better expertise. We'll learn how to sell down there. 2 months later, they call me and said, hey, Dan, we're thinking of making a leadership change of Oracle Direct. We'd like you to interview. So I went from about 60 reps to 700 in Oracle Direct. The model lives on today is the SMB org. It went from $50 million companies to $100 million companies to $250 million companies. And I'm hearing some back channel unofficially next month it's going to $500 million companies. And it's that model. And the point of the story is it hasn't been invented yet. Trust your instincts. If it makes sense to you, it probably makes sense for the business. But too often, we sit and we wait and we try to follow the rules and we don't innovate because we're afraid we might be wrong. We think that somebody above us that founded the company might have to think of it first. And it happens fundamentally between a rep and a customer and a partner. And if that makes sense, run with the model, and you'll be amazed at what happens. It's really, really powerful stuff, really rewarding. And I think I'm out of time, so thank you all.